There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer, and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great-looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection, and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
This crowd rises to its feet. Vaccaro slammed it home. Garland left wing, three ball. Perfect! Garland went to the lane, lobbed the Mobley, pow! And Allen blocked the shot at the rim. Pow! With the left hand and a foul!
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The Chase Down is presented by Fubo, the official streaming partner of the Cavs. Watch over 350 channels of live sports and TV, including Bally Sports Ohio, without cable. There's no cost and no commitment. Try for free at FuboTV.com/Cavs. We are continuing our series preview against the Orlando Magic. I could not be more excited for this matchup. Big thanks to Tristan Thompson for coming on and spending some time to help us preview it. But now we got the big guns, baby. We got the Dunker Spot boys here. But before I introduce them, my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
How about really gassing up the boys on the pod today, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Tristan Thompson, an afterthought. NBA champion Tristan Thompson, an afterthought. We got the Dunker Spot boys.
Absolutely. The big-time Dunker Spot boys. Let's start off with Nekias Duncan. Nekias, how are you doing today, buddy?
I am doing pretty well, man. Happy to be here. Excited to be just kidding. I'm not going to take Steve's thing. But no, really happy to be here. Glad to be rocking with you guys.
Steve, you look distraught. How are you doing?
Hi, hello.
Oh, wow.
There we go.
I'm uncomfortable.
I'm uncomfortable too. We are off to an unconventional start of this here podcast, and let's start it in an unconventional way. We're going to go choose your own adventure route. We could do, you know, the 45 minutes, hour, however long we're going to do to preview this, or you could take option two, door number two, which is three-pointers, kind of important. The Cavs in the games they won, they won the three-point battle by 36 points and 27 points. The two games they lost, 6 points, and lost it by 12 points. Steve, is it really just that simple? Is it just three-pointers matter?
Yes, three-pointers matter. If I do remember, there was someone who I think tweeted out, like, hey, these games don't matter. It's just who makes the most threes. And he's been proven right more times than not. I don't know if it's that simple in this matchup, but I think it's important for Cleveland because of what we've seen before in the playoffs and because of the progress they've made this season as far as spacing and movement and making sure you have Max Strus and George Niang involved in different actions, Sam Merrill knocking shots down. So I think it's going to be important for Cleveland to knock those shots down, especially, you know, when we talk about the math game against an Orlando team that can struggle in that area. I think it's important, but I don't think it's the thing.
What about you, Nekias?
I won't say it's that simple. I will say it's important for Cleveland to get there. Like, they already have the inherent advantage there with the pull-up shooters that they have. That's kind of the big thing for me. Not only does Cleveland take more, they take more in different varieties than Orlando does. So it feels like they have a way to kind of loosen the shackles of that Orlando defense that's been really good this year. So I think again, I don't think it's just who makes the most threes, but the fact that Cleveland has that built-in advantage makes it a little bit more difficult for Orlando to match up.
If I can press a little, I think the one thing that I would say is that it's not about, like, yeah, making more threes matters. I think if the Cavs can't get up threes, it's probably symptomatic that this series is not going in the direction they want it to go. Mm-hmm. You know, if they, you know, in a couple of those games, I think in one of the wins, they only got up like 22 three-point attempts.
That's correct.
Like, they got to be 30 plus in every game, probably, if they want that math to be in their favor.
Yeah, I think there's a real case for that. Like, it's, I think Orlando had one of their worst shooting games where they were 3 of 22 or something along those lines against the Cavs, and Cleveland had one of their worst shooting games, 9 of 40 in one of their losses against the Magic. But you're right. Like, I think Orlando has such a stout perimeter defense, and they're able to, you know, make things difficult. Like, we've talked about this a little bit, but I think one of the X factors in the series is going to be Darius Garland, because it's probably going to be on his shoulders to free up Donovan Mitchell. Like, Donovan Mitchell is going to be defended by Jalen Suggs, who's one of the best defenders on the planet. And unless you can get the Magic out of their base coverage and you can kind of get them scrambling a little bit, if he's going to be assertive and take those shots, those pull-up shots when they play drop, you know, we've kind of all discussed this before. I feel like we talked about this in the Knicks series as well. If he can do that, I think that would be an indicator of healthy offense and would help them generate those threes in other ways.
Actually, before I get to Garland, can I ask y'all a question? I'm just very curious. Considering Orlando can kind of do some of the same stuff the Knicks can do, do we feel better or worse? Or are we having the same conversations?
We've compared this to like the Charmander versus the Knicks Charizard. Like, in a lot of ways, there's a lot of similarities, and I'm excited about it because I want the Cavs to be tested in those ways. Like, I don't want their easiest path. This is a young team that I think has a lot of room to grow, so I want to see their like weaknesses or things that they've worked on over the regular season. I want to see if that improves, right? Like, when you look at the last year's Knicks matchup, Knicks were the best offensive rebounding team in the league. Cleveland was 24th, I think, in O rating against the Knicks that season. Like, they just struggled in the regular season. It's a little different this year, where the Cavs have the fifth best offensive rating against Orlando this season. They're ninth in rebound percentage against Orlando. So even though Orlando's a very good rebounding team, the Cavs have stepped up in those matchups. But we've seen in some of those individual ones as well, they have gotten killed on the boards, even though the season long numbers are there. So I think they've improved in a lot of those ways, but it's going to come down to execution. But you're right. Like, I think some of that kind of fan trauma is definitely still present in this matchup.
Yeah. I'm happy to point to some of that trauma. I think, you know, there are definitely some things Carter's that
going
like,
through it.
Yeah. I'm much angstier about this series than Justin is by a pretty healthy margin. You'll probably sense that based on the questions I ask you guys over the course of this thing. But like, I look at a couple things that really stress me out about this team is, you know, the rebounding is a thing, sure, but more importantly, it's the gang rebounding. Like, the Cavs got killed. Mitchell Robinson killed them, but Justin's favorite stat that he's been citing over the last couple weeks is Mitchell Robinson did not even average a single double against the Cavs in the playoffs last year.
Points and 9.8 rebounds.
He, like, that's fine. that's good for Mitchell Robinson, but that's not a series killer. It's the fact that Josh Hart is killing you on the boards. It's the fact that that RJ Barrett is killing you on the boards in that series. Like, they were getting killed 1 through 5. It wasn't just the Mitchell Robinson show that was why they got beat so bad on the offensive boards in that series. It was that gang rebounding. And hello, the Magic are like probably the best example of gang rebounding I've ever seen. They were, you know, a top, I want to say 4 defensive rebound rate team, and their leading rebounder averaged 6.9 per game. Like, that's an uncommon, you know, normally when a team is that good on the boards, they've got at least a couple like bona fide glass eaters. They don't have that. The Cavs, you know, and the Cavs, guys like Darius Garland, Donovan Mitchell, Max Strus, they're going to have to rebound positionally. And that's not always been this team's strength. So I definitely have some angst there. I think one thing that I'm a little disappointed about is I do think, you know, and Steve, you've definitely made this point on your podcast, I think the team has done a lot to address the things that killed them against the Knicks last year. Like, they have shooting, they have lineup versatility, they have, you know, at times played with much better pace in the half court. However, their two best players are either hurt or having really rough years on the perimeter. So it's like, I'm just hopeful that all that work they did in their roster construction doesn't end up getting hamstrung by the fact that their lead offense initiators are just not in the best form going into the series. You know, I worry those things cancel out, and a cancel out in getting and just equaling last year's offensive output, not what I have in mind for this postseason. So, yeah, I'm definitely the angstier of the two of us.
Well, no, I was going to say very quickly, kind of bouncing off of the game rebounding point and also to the initiator point, like, how much are you worried about Jalen Suggs in this series?
A lot, Nikias. Yeah. I'm really worried about Jalen Suggs. Jalen Suggs, like, I think a lot of Cavs fans, because Mo Wagner had that killer game against them in the regular season where he talked a lot of trash and it was a very physical kind of thing. I think a lot of fans are expecting that they're going to hate Mo Wagner by the end of the series. I worry that Jalen Suggs is the kind of guy that I'll be seeing when I close my eyes at night. You know, so I'm definitely nervous. What about you, Justin?
Yeah, I'm nervous. Like, you look at the last couple postseasons for Donovan Mitchell, he hasn't really been able to find that groove. And, you know, obviously one of the biggest questions is his health. So, yeah, like, I think Jalen Suggs is going to make him work even if he is fully healthy. And that's going to be one of the questions, which, like, I think he's going to look good game one. But how does it look with a one-day break? How does he respond, you know, as the postseason goes on? I think Jalen Suggs, honestly, people are going to have an appreciation for him. I don't think he's the type of player that you're going to hate. Carter might hate him just because, you know, he's going to be breaking down film and hating everything that he's doing. But, like, I just think that guy competes so hard and he plays such phenomenal defense that that's why I kind of feel like you have to get him out of his base defense there by, you know, attacking in other ways, whether that be Garland being assertive, whether that be the bigs being effective in the short role, doing things that gets the defense into rotation and then opens up some of those opportunities for Mitchell as an off-ball player.
Well, now that we successfully used trauma as an icebreaker,
yeah.
back to Darius Garland. Excuse me. I think he is the key for Cleveland. One, because of how Orlando's going to guard him in that drop. He's going to have space to get downhill, to penetrate, to get paint touches, to open up roles for the bigs, who are also going to be very important in having to finish and make good decisions. Garland's have to make shots. I think I tie it back into some of what was just said, to where Garland is the one person that's really going to be guaranteed a coverage. And the more I've thought about it, I've been worried about Cleveland's offense after the initial set in this series. So, like, I like their movement, I like their flow. Their tempo is better to the point where I don't have to come on this pod and yell about it again. But in my mind, because Orlando is physical and active, drive and kick is not going to be automatic because they're going to have help. They're going to slide their feet. They have size and length. So how important is it to flow into a handoff for Darius Garland or to get Darius Garland flying off another screen or getting Max Strus flying off another screen? So that's where I think Garland's value is going to come, not just in pick and roll, but he's going to have to be the glue to kind of keep this thing churning so they can keep Orlando moving defensively.
It's going to come down to tempo. Like, I agree with you, because what we've seen with this Cavs, you know, post All-Star break struggle is they've fallen back into some of those bad habits, right? Like, you can work on things and you can improve individually, you can improve as a team, but until it's like, it's one thing to do that over 82. It's another thing where, man, like, this game really matters. Maybe, you know, you lose home court in one of these first two games and you're in a high pressure situation in Orlando. Do some of those bad habits or kind of fallback tendencies that you have, do you go back to that? Do you slow it down to the pace below 90 possessions because you're really trying to, you know, value every single possession? Maybe you're nursing a little bit of a lead. Like, prior to the All-Star break and prior to Garland being hurt, his pace actually went up in the clutch. Like, he was someone that was driving the tempo for them. And then you look post All-Star break and it's, man, it just kind of progressively gets slower. A lot of
85s and 82s.
You know, good first half tempo, third quarter is slowing down, fourth quarter slows down, clutch gets even slower. So that's definitely something that I'm going to keep my eye on, because I think Orlando's defense is just too good to be starting possessions with 12 seconds left on the shot clock.
Yeah, and I think that's absolutely fair. And, you know, it's funny because I think you could also probably point similar things to Orlando here. You know,
100%.
Like a lot of these teams,
slow them the hell down.
Like as much as I'm angsting about all the things I think the Magic can do against the Cavs, a lot of the Magic are in a lot of ways offensively a one trick pony. They got to get to the rim, they got to draw fouls, like, and they got to finish at the rim because they're not going to hit a lot of mid rangers. They're not going to hit a high volume of threes, at least on a game to game basis. So my question for you, Nikias, is for which team is pace more important? The Cavs or the Magic? Because the Magic also probably need to get out and run and get into weird cross matches and things like that if they want to get clean looks.
Carter, you don't know what you've just done to me.
Oh my goodness.
As much as I have enjoyed watching the Orlando Magic this season, and Steve can attest to it, the one thing that has annoyed me to no end with Orlando is how slow they play and how infrequently they get out in transition. Despite some of the mismatches that they can create because of the collective size that they have, they absolutely have to grab some of the low-hanging fruit in the series. If Cleveland does bog down, either on their own doing or with Orlando just defending their actions well, they have to get out and get some early ones because Cleveland has a pretty darn good defense as well in the half court. You don't want them to get set either. I think Orlando needs to get the easy ones, especially in light of, you know, we've talked about the Magic throughout the year. This isn't a team that shoots a lot of threes. This isn't a team that shoots well from behind the arc. They do generally space the floor well. And I think if you were giving Cleveland the ability to kind of load up and set where they want their help to come from and shade in early, you're just making life too difficult for your young stars in Paolo and Franz Wagner. I think they have to get the early stuff, get Cleveland in foul trouble, and kind of control the pace in that way.
I think it's also just getting favorable cross matches, you know, like in base personnel, especially, you know, with Mobley and Jared out there, they're going to be able to find their way to good mashups and route Paolo and Franz where they want them to go in to help. You know, that the whole geometry of the floor is going to change if they get a steal and Donovan Mitchell has to pick up Franz Wagner in semi-transition. And then all of a sudden, now you have to send two to the ball right away on those rim attacks. So I think that is kind of takes me to my next point, which is it just feels like this is going to be a math problem series. But in terms of the possession count, you know, like the Cavs cannot give away the ball. This is one of the best turnover forcing defenses in the league. If the Cavs are giving away the ball, I think that is the kind of the sending the stone rolling down the hill of, okay, now they're getting steals. It's easier for them to find their way into transition. And if Orlando is finding themselves in transition, all of a sudden that pendulum starts tilting in their favor.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notified, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
I think that's fair. I think it's very interesting because I want to see what Cleveland does defensively. Do they get back to like that identity of being really physical and being really active and showing help? I feel like they're going to have to. They need to dictate terms to Orlando a little bit because Orlando is a young team, but they are a confident team. And this is a team that you need to go, like, they're going to deliver a blow. You need to go ahead and be active, deny their movement, get them late in the clock, maybe force some turnovers. You know, if they're living in that 11 turnover, 12 turnover, 13 turnover lane, have you accomplished what you want? Are they rattled? Have you pushed them off their spot? And that's kind of what I want to see from Cleveland, because we've seen some of these moments where Orlando has these games and a team jumps on them. It's like, oh, this is different. You've also seen where they find that resilience because they have an identity too. Like, it's like, who's going to impose their will? And so you bring up the possessions, and now I'm thinking, could something swing each game here? We're going to have a three-point game. We have a free throw game. We have a turnover game. Like, it's
probably –
it's up in the air. You know what I mean?
Can I just tell you that sentence stressed me out so much? I hated it.
Poor Carter, man. He is going through this. I think some of it was also, he's just way too confident last year in our preview against the Knicks. Like,
we don't need to talk about that anymore.
Yeah, no, I'm bringing it up. I'm bringing it up because I want you to know that I'm always on the side of being right. But no, you're right. With that kind of in mind, like, I think Orlando, because they're not super prolific from three, Cleveland's going to be able to kind of show help, and they're going to be able to show and recover and not risk getting burnt the same way that they have. Like, the rotations defensively just haven't been as good since the All-Star break, where, you know, they've just kind of overhelped or underhelped. Like, it's just everything's been kind of a half step slow. I think they're going to be able to throw some length at Paolo, and even though he's really grown and improved as a playmaker, he can still be, you know, liable to make a few turnovers and have one of those like 5-6 turnover games. What do you think the best approach is in defending Paolo? Like, do you want to be throwing a lot of help at him? Do you want to be throwing doubles and try to test him as a playmaker? Because,
or do you just say, Evan, go ahead?
I wouldn't yet. Yeah, go ahead. I'm matching. I don't think I'd put Mobley on him, but that might be for a little bit later.
Oh,
what would your approach be? Let's get back to the first question before we get to my Mobley take. But Steve, go ahead.
Oh, never mind. I could take it. Ha! I think for me, it's got to be a mixture because of how Orlando uses Paolo. So he's gonna post up. He's gonna be in pick and roll. He's gonna ISO at the elbow at the top. On the side, he'll be a screener. So that's where I'll delay it, but that's where I think Evan Mobley can help with that matchup. But I think you've got to show bodies and show early help and try and discourage the driving lanes. You got to make sure you funnel it to shooters and recover. You know, you got to dig on his drives. I don't think you have to double to start, but you can mix those in. The biggest thing is that you have to try and get him out of his rhythm. When he's able to size you up, when he's able to get into his comfort and his flow, and hesitate, now he hits you, or he's able to back you down. That's where we've seen that growth from Paolo, to where he knows what shots he can take. He's taking more of those than people may think, and he's passing once he sees the help. Like, there are times where he's just playing for the help to come, and now he's making the play. So for Cleveland, I think it's very important to have a mindset to take him away, but also not put themselves in a position where now they're opening plays up for Orlando that they may not have had before.
Tristan Thompson, when we talked to him yesterday, did mention like that it is kind of a head on a swivel series for them, where even when they are showing help, they have to watch the backdoor cuts. They have to mm-hmm. they have to watch the baseline, the dunker spot, and all the spaces there, because this is like, it's not a team that shoots a lot, but they are pretty savvy in how they move and how they space. And I think that's absolutely fair. Nikias, what about you?
I was going to say, I give Evan Mobley the matchup. I show help high, peel it in early high, and see what he does. Like, I think that's how I would play that. I don't know if I want to send Paolo doubles unless I have to, but just crowd the space. Force him to finish over Evan Mobley, or try to finish through Evan Mobley. Send that help high. You can dare him to make some skips. I was actually going to toss a quick question to Steve. Like, how have you felt about his growth as a skip passer this year? Because you've talked a lot about his growth as a playmaker overall. But in that particular area, how have you felt about him?
I've liked it.
I've liked there we it. Go. Thorough. Very Sorry, thorough.
Man. Well, no. Well, my mind went to when he brought the Tristan Thompson quote, I was thinking a lot of people do think about Orlando not being able to shoot, but they can space. And that's something that Cleveland has to anticipate, to where – yes, you might want to funnel certain shots or so certain help, but now if Orlando's able to get a cut, remove that help, and now you're rotating just a little bit, does that shift things for you? So that's where my brain went. Sorry.
And here's a little niche.
I was told that spacing is only defined by your three-point percentage of everyone in the lineup. Like, it's a little bit of a math equation. I didn't know you could do it by, like,
positioning. Yeah, it's just math. It's spreadsheet ball. That does bring me to a niche point that you bring up there, Steve, is I think that's where Orlando's positional size really helps, because a lot of times, like, you know, especially since their point of attack guys are these big dudes you have to guard with your big dudes. Like, when a 6'5 Suggs is flashing into the paint, he's just got a bigger catch radius than the 6'1 guard that might be on him has. You know, Jonathan Isaac has a big catch radius, you know, and he gets cleaner catches on those things. And you just have more places to throw the ball. You know, you're not trying to, like, thread the needle so much in that tight space, because you can kind of put it anywhere along that baseline and someone's going to be able to go grab it. And, like, I think that's one strength of theirs with their positional sizes. Like, a lot of times that guy ducking in is going to be bigger than the guy that's tagging him and on his back hip trying to disrupt that entry pass. I want to ask a weird question about Paolo, which is, like, Justin and I have talked ad nauseum about Jalen Brunson and how he didn't actually have a good series against the Cavs. If you look at the numbers, like, not particularly efficient. He was way, like, worlds better against Miami.
He had a good series. He did not have an efficient series.
Yeah, that's fair to say. Yeah. He was not efficient against the Cavaliers at all. But, you know, because the Cavs couldn't score, you know, every mid-range pull-up felt that much worse. What percent chance are we saying the same thing about every Paolo game where he's shooting 40% from the field, but he hits a couple daggers in, you know, some 93-89 slugfests?
Paolo and efficiency? That's go this way.
Go that guy. Go ahead, Nikias.
I would not be surprised if we have the Paolo had a good game but didn't shoot well. Like, I think he does do a really good job of just putting pressure on defenses. Like, the jumper kind of is what it is, but, like, something that Steve and I both talked about this year, the types of shots that he's taken, like, that has expanded for him. And thus, depending on who's guarding him or what Cleveland decides to throw at him, like, we may get the random Paolo's hit two pull-up threes, which doesn't sound like a lot. But for him, considering how often he gets to the rim, the way they use him, again, Steve talked about the post-ups. I had a question for y'all, actually, about, like, defending Paolo and some of the off-ball defenses. Justin brought up the rotations and stuff a little bit earlier. But because you can move him around to that degree and he can get shots from just about anywhere, I could absolutely see a situation to where it's 23 points on 22 shots, but you've had to work to make every last one of those difficult, and him just literally weighing on you for 48 minutes, or I guess 40 minutes for him if they rent the minutes up, it's just going to wear on Cleveland. Like, I could see that for sure.
That is the most Nikias hedge there. Like, actually, it'd be 40 minutes.
let me make sure.
God bless you.
We got to be honest. Like,
we love you for who you are, Nikias.
Players aren't able to give us the 48 minutes of consistent play like they used to. But know who can give us 48 great minutes? Zoom! Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb. tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
All right, I'm going to launch my theory here. I think I would start Evan Mobley on Franz. I think I would want Evan Mobley to be there to disrupt Franz's dribble. I think his ability, his lateral quickness defensively, can stop him from getting downhill. And until he kind of proves that, you know, he can rediscover his form from deep, because I think he can shoot. Like, I know what the numbers are this year, but I still believe in him as a shooter. Mm-hmm. But I think Mobley might be able to help off him every now and then. I think you can have guys like Max Strus get into Paolo's space, Isaac Okoro when he's coming in off the bench, try to disrupt the dribble and force him to shoot over a shorter defender with Evan Mobley and Jared Allen being able to provide some help. And this way, I just feel like there's less likelihood that Paolo gets Mobley in foul trouble. Like, I think relative of the two, I think Franz is going to be less likely to do that. So just Mobley's ability to stop Franz from getting downhill, I think that could disrupt Orlando's offense, because they threw some doubles at Franz. They did quite a bit in some of these past matchups just to kind of disrupt his rhythm and stop him from getting downhill and force him into some turnovers.
Can I ask you a question very quickly?
Yes.
Because that's an interesting idea, and I like the case as you laid it out. How worried would you be about Franz off ball? Not necessarily the shooting, but because I think he is just their best cutter.
Yeah. I'd be a little worried. Like, that would be something that you're probably kind of having an understanding that someone else is going to have to rotate to him. Like, we're going to be cheating off of somebody. Like, I think Orlando's going to start, you know, playing Markel Fultz as part of the rotation, but it wouldn't be surprising to me if he kind of gets the treatment where, hey, this is getting tough. Like, they're being able to, you know, send Mobley to help on a drive, and whoever's guarding Fultz is just rotating over and getting to Franz, and Markel's just kind of being left alone. Like, I think he's going to have to get some offense going in order to, you know, justify consistent minutes in the rotation. It would concern me, but I think that would be something that you'd have to be game planning for, which is, you know, if Mobley's going to help off of him, we need to make sure that he's not relocating into kind of those dangerous areas.
I'm gonna ask the Dunker Spot boys. I'll go with Steve this question, because I think this meaningfully affects how the Cavs should defend Paolo and should defend Franz. Is who's starting at the five? You know, Jonathan Isaac started game 82. A lot of Magic fans have been enormous fans of him. Should it be Wendell Carter Jr.? Because I think it changes the way you guard this Magic starting five. If Isaac is at the five versus a Carter Jr., because, you know, you might be able to stash Strus over on a guy like Jonathan Isaac and just say, hey, Evan, you take Franz, Jarrett, you take Paolo, and, you know, we'll just help.
Interesting. I'm glad you mentioned that. I had one Jonathan Isaac thought this week about him at the five and switching, and every Magic fan told me they're going to start Jonathan Isaac. So let's just go with that premise.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of that.
He's only started two games, so I was like, is this stupid that I'm asking this? Because it's not like I've been watching Magic all year, but Magic Twitter doesn't seem to think it's stupid.
No, they've been very loud about that. Now, my concern with that would be the rotation. Like, where do you go from there? Because of you need Wendell Carter, you need Mo Wagner. They both have been important.
Yeah, it gets hard.
So I think that's where I would probably hit the pause button. If Isaac were to start, it would be interesting. I think you probably would then feel comfortable with maybe like a Strus on there, or maybe even Jared Allen, because they've shown they've not been afraid to bring Jared Allen up and almost show two on the ball against Franz, or occasionally switch Jared onto Paolo. So does it alter your coverages that much? It probably just hurts you on your help because of his ability to cut as well, and he's not willing to move the ball, knock down some shots. I just think that I would rather have Evan Mobley on Paolo. I'm sorry.
No, that's fair.
I'm being
wacky podcast host right now. I've got ideas. I've got
wackety
concepts.
Schmackety do. Yeah.
And I think it's mainly just because of, like, the foul trouble point is a very key one, and I totally buy it. But when you're looking at what Evan Mobley can do, one, he's got the size. He can contain the penetration. He can contest the shots. And if you're going to try and use Paolo as a screener, that's going to be normal coverage for Cleveland. So you don't have to necessarily sweat about that. You could switch with Jared Allen, and now you're still in normal coverage. Like, it's just that you can kind of stay with your base, but also bother the Paolo matchup to a degree. I do like the idea of eventually moving to, hey, we have two help points, you know, because Evan Mobley's such a good helper. Right. But I think to set the tone, you know, because the last thing you want Paolo to do is, you know,
get a groove game one.
Get a groove immediately, you know, drive, get an and one on Max Shoes or something like that. And now, okay, where do we go there? You know, you don't want to set the tone.
I have a weird thought that I don't think a lot of, it's just been kind of lingering in the back of my brain. I think a lot of people will yell at me for it. But part of me just, so one thing that, if it's not clear, I'm a really big fan of this Orlando team. I'm not quite Nikias level, but I do quite like them. And I think one thing that makes them so challenging is the fact that they have such size at the three and the four. And the Cavs are not actually a very positionally big team, even though they're kind of famously, you know, the traditional team playing two bigs at the four and the five. But, you know, Evan is your backup five. And, you know, so at all times, if they're playing, you know, a bruising big, you only have one big to throw at Franz or Paolo at any given time. And I know this feels a bit like going backwards, because everyone's like, oh, we got spacing, we got shooting. Should they just play Okoro, Mobley, and Allen some minutes together and just say, hey, Orlando, you're just not going to score against us. And we trust our play. We trust our shot creation in Darius and Donovan more than we think you're going to be able to get anything decent off with those three guys on the floor.
Let's simplify this down to Caris LeVert or Isaac Okoro, who should play more off the bench. Because really, that's probably what the question's going to be.
I know no one, I know every, you know, a lot of people, like, you know, I've heard Lowe say it like 12 times, can't play those three together. And I'm like, well, I think you can, and I think they had a really bad playoff series.
Oh, Nikai, you pondering? Okay.
I am pondering.
He's pondering.
Yeah, I'm trying to think, like, have I seen the Justin tweet update for what Isaac Okoro is shooting from three since, like, January of 2022?
Well, probably not, because it hasn't been going that well recently.
No, it's still steady. Hey, hang on, let me just fire up Clean Glass and I'll get this going. I've got a Google sheet of just Cav stats from, like, random dates where I just kind of update the numbers in there and it spits it all out. I'm disgusting. I'm sorry. I apologize for my behavior, but
Okoro is in a mini slump from three, is to quickly answer your question, Nikias.
Okay. With him being in the slump, like I still see the argument for it, if for no other reason than to kind of simplify your defensive matchups. And ultimately, like, if Orlando's gonna bog down to half court, and if they're not gonna run in transition, like, you probably don't worry about Cleveland having like a 95 offensive rating in those minutes if Orlando's gonna be at 90.
So, like, that's kind of what I'm thinking. I kind of see a world in which, so the Cavs Discord, when the Cavs are playing ugly, they call it mud ball. Like, I feel like this is the muddiest way to play, which is just saying,
real basketball,
hey,
baby.
Hey, our mud ball is better than your mud ball. And I think there's actually a case for the Cavs to be able to make that argument. What do you think, Steve?
Yes. I think this, I like that. I like the mud series aspect of it. I think the fact that Cleveland's comfortable with that probably says a lot, and they would be comfortable having Okoro with those two bigs. Here's my thing about Okoro, right? The threes are one thing. I've loved his drives all year long. Yep. And if he's going to be able to beat closeouts against a team that's helping off him, that's important for Cleveland in this series. Now, I will quickly pause and attempt to do the Nikias translation, where his doubt for Caris LeVert's defense was stronger than anything else in that question. Am I right?
That's fair. He's been found out. That face is exactly that was Nikias Duncan.
Hold on.
Found
whoa.
Out.
Whoa. That's a good shot, though. I understand. But it's less that and more kind of tying back to the beginning of the conversation. It really depends on, like, which version of Darius Garland you're getting. Because I feel like if he isn't able to really hammer Orlando, if they say, okay, you're getting the drop, but we're going to continue to trap Donovan Mitchell. If Darius Garland can't make enough shots or can't make enough plays to hit that, or if the shot just isn't falling for him, then the need for the Caris LeVert shot creation in the non-Mitchell minutes or the non-Garland minutes are going to be more important than anything Isaac Okoro is going to bring you with respect to the defense, the cutting, the drives, et cetera. And so, like, I worry more about that portion of it than Caris won't be able to defend.
I think that's a great point. Like, how much are you trying to supplement offense or defense? Because in the last matchup, Okoro guarded Paolo quite a bit in that game. I believe Paolo went 2 of 12.
6 of 20, I think, in that game.
But 2 of 12 when Okoro was guarding him. But it's worth noting, I believe Paolo was also dealing with a little bit of a cold in that game as well. So, you know, under the weather. But, you know, if he can disrupt Paolo's dribble and, like, kind of really get into his space, maybe that's what you're going with. Maybe if Garland's struggling, as you said, you go to Caris LeVert. It'll be interesting to see. Like, I think Paolo has a lot of potential defensively, but I don't think he's fully realized it yet. Maybe that switch flips in the playoffs, but I do think, you know, relative to what the Knicks were able to do defending Evan Mobley and Jared Allen going downhill, I think they're probably going to have a little bit of an easier time, despite how many great defenders Orlando has. Like, you look at the regular season minutes, all of it's small sample, and I'd love to know if you guys think, like, any of it's even worth looking at, because Jonathan Isaac wasn't playing at the five at the start of it. Like, the Cavs only have three lineups that have played over 10 minutes against the Magic this season. The one that's played the most played 17 minutes, and these teams played four times, right? Like, the starting lineup, fantastic against them. The 130 net rating, or 130 offensive rating.
That's a hell of a net rating, bro.
Best lineup I've ever seen.
Yeah, 130 offensive rating and a plus 35 net rating. So they were great. Mobley and Allen only played 31 minutes together against the Magic, but they had a 129.2 offensive rating and plus 35.3 net rating, right? So, like, those are small numbers, like, in terms of sample size, but they're at least positive when you compare to kind of the regular season data we had going into the Knicks. How confident do you feel in the Cavs' ability to generate offense with both bigs on the court? Because really, like, we talk about Garland sustaining offense, and that's still one of my biggest X factors, but I feel like how productive those two are is also going to be kind of one of those determining factors of whether or not you go to someone like Caris LeVert versus an Isaac Okoro.
Is Nikias going to drop a hit the do better button?
No, we're not doing Nikias bingo on the pod. Come on. But, like, I feel pretty solid about Cleveland being able to generate good stuff. It feels like, and honestly, I wish I checked, like, Second Spectrum before we got on here, but it feels like Cleveland has tapped more into the super high pick and roll bag against Orlando compared to other teams. And, like, even with all the length they have, like, Darius Garland being able to chew that up, or Donovan Mitchell being able to chew that up. And if Orlando's still trying to have a big at the level against Donovan Mitchell, that's where some of the pick and roll splits have come in. Like, I think I feel pretty good about them generating offense based on what those two guards can do and what they can generate. So I'm fine with it. To the Steve point, like, they have to keep the tempo up. Like, they can't afford to fall down against them. But I think they can generate good stuff with both bigs on the floor.
I'm just really hoping that the points per possession as a pick and roll big is better than it was against the Knicks series, because I don't know if you guys remember that. It was 0.08 for Evan Mobley for the series.
Well, I didn't have the numbers, but my eyes told me it was close to that. I'll tell you that much. I think the aggression from Jared Allen this year on the short roll has been key. The cutting from Evan Mobley when he's spaced in that lineup, and the fact that they've been able to hit some of those big, big passes at times has been key. So there's a higher level of confidence. They are going to have to prove it, though. Like, I don't think it's going to be as loud as the Knicks made it. To where literally you're on the short roll, we don't believe you, we're going to contest, you're good. But they do have to have an impact so that now, okay, we definitely know we have to help on these roles. So it'll have a little bit of a different feel. My thought process, and I think they both can flow into actions, it's good. Obviously, you split them and you have one big on the floor. I wonder how that part of the program goes.
That stresses me out more than the two of them on the floor. To be honest,
does Orlando find something against those lineups, whether it's switching or Isaac at the five or, you know, trapping or anything like that, to where those, because I think those, I've loved those minutes when they split and they kind of split their unit up here, you two, but if those aren't as impactful, are you back in the same boat of, well, the double big lineup has to do X, Y, Z, as opposed to we can kind of get this going, get our defense, and now we go back to our versatility we go throughout.
Well, I have some, you know, and I have some rotational questions for what you think the Cavs should do for a little bit later. But I do think, you know, that I agree with you that that is really important. They need to be able to you know, at least draw dead on their stagger minutes, so they're not so desperately reliant on the two bigs. Something that I think is really going to define how those stagger minutes go is again, goes back to the Darius and Donovan piece, because I feel like, you know, I said on our last pod that I'm worried about this series for George Niang, because this is a series where, you know, like he's best used when the Cavs are getting the other teams into rotation a lot and they're having to scramble to him, or he's just straight up pulling a rim protector out of the paint. You know, that's where he's at his best. The Magic are tough because they're big and fast and strong, you know, like that. So like if the Cavs in those one big minutes aren't getting two on the ball, if they're not getting Orlando into rotation, then I worry that there's just going to be a lot of these kind of, you know, like the Cavs offense at its worst can be very horizontal, very side to side, you know, it's kind of just passing it around the perimeter. You know, they're running stuff, but they're not really yielding an advantage to press. And like, I think that is like the number one indicator for how those one big lineups are going to go is like, hey, can you, when you just run a high pick and roll that's spread, if they can just hang in a drop and keep two and not bring an extra body over, your goose is probably cooked, right? And I'll throw Nikias.
Oh yeah, I think it could get difficult for George Niang. Steve's laughing because I've had Niang thoughts throughout
for 3 years.
Okay, I've had my Niang questions about how he's held up defensively, etc. But I think Carter's point is sound. Like, I believe if you are able to just kind of switch some of the stuff, or if he isn't able to get some of those openings offensively, it's kind of like, what do you do? And like, even with some of the lineups he may be facing, because I would assume he's coming off the bench with Orlando's second unit in particular, like, anyone can be a cutter, and more importantly, anyone can be a screener. So like, you can't even really hide him on quote unquote non-shooter, because they will just use that guy as a pick and roll screener or just off ball. We'll set this.
They also play quicker with the second unit.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's funny though, because like, I think the defense, knowing that there's going to be stuff teams can do to attack a guy like Niang on defense, like that's a functional, like understood thing when you play a, you know, an offensive specialist. I just worry that it's a series where he's going to catch the ball a lot, and against other teams, it might be a semi-open three, but a dude's right in his jersey, you know? So like, it's going to be really, really important. And that does move me to the rotation question, which is the Cavs have been playing with Dean Wade, you know, out for the, you know, last month or so. I forget exactly how long it's been. JB has kind of settled into an 8-man rotation for the last, you know, week or two of the season. It's the starting five, it's Karis, it's Niang, it's Okoro. Does he play eight to start this series, or does Marcus Morris get a shot? Does Sam Merrill get a shot? Or does he just say, hey, I'm not going to change the formula that I've been working towards for the last month? And Steve, I'd like to ask you, because like, I feel like that's a challenging conundrum, because eight doesn't give you a lot of room to go anywhere, but also that's what they've been doing.
I think Marcus Morris gets put in the in case of X box. I am curious to see if Sam Merrill gets a shot off the bench, depending on what the lineups are, the rotations are, if he gets a moment to kind of add some movement to that second unit and see what he can bring pressure-wise against Orlando and see if that helps the flow. Because even tying it back to the George Niang point, his shooting, it could be a question mark. If he's a help point, that's not awesome. But he is involved in some of what Cleveland does flow-wise. And if you can add movement, I think that's a plus. So I would say I think he starts with nine.
And would you start with nine? And would it be Merrill?
Yes. I'll go Sam Merrill.
How about you, Nikias?
Sam Merrill will get a run.
Yeah, I would also go nine, and I would also go Merrill. Like, I think the shooting is going to be pretty valuable in this series. And, like, even circling back to, like, the super high pick and roll point, I was able to pull it up on the side. Like, they went high double drag with Sam Merrill as your first screener, and that, I think that posed a lot of problems for Orlando when they went to that setup in particular. So in addition to just the spot up stuff, the movement stuff for Merrill, being able to use him in that way and generate some more mismatches early in the clock, I think would be valuable for Cleveland.
Justin?
Yeah, no, like the thing that I keep coming back to is
Justin's been pushing back on the Merrill minutes a little bit on here.
Just been a little bit skeptical because the thing that I keep struggling with is that the results don't match up with the eye test, because I really do feel like the gravity he has, the spacing, I love his movement. I think his positional defense is sound. It's just for whatever reason, the offense has been dropping off. The offense has been dropping off for like 4 months now, where the offensive rating drops by 10 points. Like, it's, I don't know what to do with that. I've tried filtering it by quarter and being like, well, maybe it's like dragged down by the fourth quarter, but the fourth quarters are better than the rest. Like, I can't figure out what it is. And a part of it, I do think Orlando is going to be a series where he's going to be needed at some point. I think particularly when Orlando has a second unit and they're playing a little more loose and free, and, you know, Cole Anthony's out there, I think that's where you can go to Sam Merrill. And I just think my ninth to start off might actually be Marcus Morris, just because Dean Wade isn't there and you're going to need a bigger body. And I just worry about foul trouble. Like, my mind keeps going back to game four against the Knicks, where Cavs probably steal that game if they had a big to go in when Evan Mobley got into foul trouble. Like, I don't want to lose a game because you're only sticking to kind of two bigger players and one of them misses some serious time in the rotation. So for that reason.
And then the third is Niang, who is, you know, not a defensive, you know, presence.
I think there might be a place for Niang in this series, particularly if Jonathan Isaac is out there and it's multiple kind of, you know, 6'10 guys. Like, I think Niang can kind of hold his own. Like, we've seen him defend like a Julius Randle well, right, in space, or guys that aren't too kind of shifty. He can usually do a decent job, you know, using his body and staying in position there. So I think there might be a spot for George Niang. But if you're not getting production out of Niang and he's not getting free, you need that movement shooting from somewhere. And I think that's where you go to Sam Merrill, right? Like, because teams aren't always going to be able to expose Merrill and Niang, right, in terms of what the actions they're able to put them in defensively. So just because you need that movement shooting at some point, I think it's going to be an either or between those two when it comes to, you know, getting rotation minutes.
I think it's just, you know, I can't keep going back to, no matter whether it's a Merrill or a Morris, I do think you just have to start with nine. Just because you need somewhere to go. It's just so hard, you know. I don't know, like, if I've ever seen a coaching staff go from an 8-man rotation into a 9-man rotation over the course of a series. You know, typically you pare down over time. You find who's working, and, you know, it just doesn't give you a lot of room. And, you know, you don't want to, you know, if you start with 8 and Niang has a bad game one, you don't necessarily want to just have to be like, well, I guess he's done. All his minutes go to Morris. Like, that just puts you into a bit of a bind. And, like, I think the one thing that I keep going back to with this roster is, like, my pet term I've been using is pumpkin insurance in the postseason. Like, you need, you're going to play series where you have a role player who just cannot play, you know, like, even if they're a good role player. You know, I think, like, the most notable example for Cavs fans would be Channing Frye in 2016, helped in every playoff series. And then after like 5 minutes of that Warrior series, we were like, Channing, welcome to the bench. You're not playing anymore, buddy. Like, you know, and that doesn't mean Channing wasn't awesome. It just wasn't the right matchup for him. And, like, I think the Cavs are at a point where they do have that pumpkin insurance on this roster. If Karis is having, you know, a bad Karis game, you can say, hey, Sam, we need some more minutes out of your hell. Struce, you're going to have to play some minutes at the two. If they're beating us up at the point of attack, you know, you might have to say, hey, Ice, Okoro, you're going to have to go out there and you're going to end up playing 30 minutes. Like, I think they have more guys that they can go out and reasonably expect to play 25 to 30 minutes in a game than they did last year by a healthy margin. I mean, like, the second lever JB had to pull last year was a one-legged Danny Green. Like that, and that's just the truth. He had to go to him so, or it was game two that he was like, well, Danny, I guess it's you or 40 minutes of Jetty.
Yeah, and, or Lamar Stevens.
Or Lamar Stevens. And, like, so I do think they have the optionality that allows them that. I'm curious how flexible they'll be, you know, in terms of giving those top eight guys their run versus just saying, you know, very quickly going, oh, this isn't Okoro, you missed 4 threes in a row, you're done. I don't know what the right answer is.
My gut instinct is to say there might be more wiggle room this year, to where I don't think they'll be like necessarily searching to plug a certain hole. Like, I think each lineup has its own purpose. Now, as the series goes on, does that change to where, hey, the defense isn't here from you, you can't, your run shorter, the shot making's not here from you, your run shorter? I think that's fair, but I don't think it would change the mindset going in, because each lineup has its own purpose. The rotation has its purpose. They have things that can run and defenses they can use for each source, to where it ties to their identity. So I think that's the plus of having done the work they did during the regular season.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard to snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Are you tired of your scented cleaning products smelling and cleaning like meh? Then it's time for an upgrade with the power of Clorox Scentiva. With an uplifting scent that smells like coconut, Clorox Scentiva gives you powerful clean like Clorox, but a feeling like being transported to a tropical island retreat. Imagine putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, tuning out all the constant, just the feeling of warm sand in between your toes and a fruity drink in your hand. The ones with the little umbrella. Refresh your home to feel like an all-inclusive vacation by getting Clorox Scentiva. Also available in grapefruit and lavender scents at a nearby retail store.
Yeah. You can tell that Carter's angsty because he's going extra long-winded. We are both two of the most long-winded people on the planet, and he just went ham. Like, he is so
listen. Let me tell you something about this man. I'm gonna throw this right back. I have to cut clips of this podcast.
I'm awful. I'm the worst.
And we try to keep them under 45 seconds for social. And this man will just do 9 takes in a row and never put a period at the end of a single sentence. So, you know, Justin will just be, so every clip every clip we've ever tweeted out of Justin ends with him just trailing off. Cause I've just fade down his audio because he's already on to the next take.
Here's how terrible I am. I edit the audio of these podcasts. So I see like the big blue blob that is all of my soliloquies, and I don't change. I don't improve.
You can't fix it. I can't fix it.
I am who I am. But we, ranting, have taken up a lot of your guys' time. I have one last question before we get out of here, because we've talked about the rotations. We've talked about the role guys. We've gone real nitty-gritty with that. But I think the one kind of constant theme I'm hearing here is the importance and how much of an X factor both Darius Garland and Evan Mobley are. Both of them had weird injury-filled seasons. They had moments where they've looked like themselves. They've had moments where they haven't. And usually when we talk leaps, we talk about regular season 82-game improvements in terms of your box score stats, right? Like, that's what we're looking for whenever it's most improved. As much as we want it to be something else, that's what it is. But when it comes to the playoffs, We sometimes see a different leap when it comes to processing speed and your ability to consistently execute. With that in mind, are there specific things you're keeping an eye on when it comes to both Garland and Mobley that would indicate, hey, they've made kind of one of those playoff leaps to become those postseason difference makers?
I think for me, I'll start with Mobley. Like, something I noted not too long ago on the pod was just appreciating one, how much quicker he's making decisions when he's in the short roll, and generally just his spatial awareness. Like even when he is short rolling, where he's short rolling to. Like there was a play, I wish I could remember which team it was. It was like a short roll opportunity. He was at the elbow. Then he just kind of backtracked into a catch and shoot three point attempt. And he missed. And I was like, the footwork's clean. He read where the help was coming from. He found an opening and he took it without hesitation. I don't care that it was a miss. I like that he's sprinkling that in. And that can kind of go into the broader conversation about what his jumper is, when he's going to become a deadlier three-point shooter, all that good stuff. But the fact that he read that, made that decision as quickly as he did, that stood out to me. So I think for me, if he is going to get short roll opportunities, if he's screening for Donovan Mitchell in particular, how quickly is he diagnosing where the help is coming from? How quickly is he going to his move? I'm fine if it's a pass if he does it with pace. I am fine if it is a short jumper if he does it with pace. I'm fine if it's a catch and a drive and putting the shoulder into someone's chest if he does it with pace. So that's probably where I start with Evan Mobley.
So you're no catch and hold. I think for me with Mobley, it's aggression. It's just
he's cursed with options sometimes.
it's overall aggression. To tie to Nikaisa's point about quick decision making, play with force, be impactful. If you don't have it, get off of it. Let's get into something else. And that's probably what I would say about Darius Garland too. Make them feel you offensively. Use your speed to your advantage. Change speeds. Cut. Use your cutting. Use all the tools that you have and attack those moments. And like, shouldn't be a catch and hold. Shouldn't be a walk it up. Shouldn't be a catch and wait. You have the speed. You can cut. You know how to get this offense flowing. You can take and make these shots. We've seen the nights where Darius Garland makes a shot and he's cursing at everyone in the building, but no one in particular. He's got to be that guy in the playoffs. To support
game two showed that last year against the Knicks, right? Like it was, all right, you're going to play drop. I'm going to hit every single one of these threes and almost put down a dunk on Isaiah Hartenstein, which I think if he put that one down, I would not be here on this year podcast.
You'd be 6 feet under, brother.
Especially with me in the building. No, that would be it. That would be it for me.
that would have been so wonderful. I'm going to answer your question too, even though obviously you were asking the guys who actually know what they're talking about. One thing I'll say for Darius is I think seeing him get to the point where hyper physicality and aggression doesn't bother him anymore. I thought that was something I really felt was a big reason the Cavs offense bogged down so bad. Obviously the spacing was rough, but there's a reason, you know, the offensive rating cratered from the regular season with the same personnel. And I think it's because Darius was trying to run off ball action and, you know, guys like Grimes and Hart and all those guys, they're just grabbing him and pulling him. And, you know, it just every action took 2-3 seconds longer than it needs to take for the offense to be crisp. I want to see him figure out how to use that aggression against these guys. He is a quick, you know, he is really great at stopping, starting, messing with guys' tempo. They, in that series, I felt like the Knicks told him where he was going to go on the floor a lot. I want to see him. You know, he's never going to be, this beast of a physical specimen. But there are other roads to you know, finding yourself into open space and manipulating where your off-ball defenders are going and how you're using your screens and things like that. I think that level of control of the floor will tell me a lot about how ready it is to impact a game regardless of what the defense is doing, which is, you know, that is basketball nirvana, right? Doesn't matter what the scheme is or how hard they're trying. You're controlling the floor. I think that would signify a playoff leap for me for Darius.
You know, we started this off with an overly simplistic, hey, making threes is important. I think it's only appropriate that we are closing with, do the Cavs dictate terms of engagement? Do they play their style of basketball? Do they play their defense, or do they overreact like they did last year to Jalen Brunson? Do they stick to their identity offensively? Do they revert to their worst habits, right? Like the best teams in the league have an identity and the game takes that shape because they are dictating how they want to play. So, Nikaias, Steve, thank you both so much for coming on. For everyone listening, I'm sure you guys are already checking out the Dunker Spot, but they did a terrific Cavs Magic breakdown as well as other breakdowns for the Eastern Conference and will be giving us terrific content
throughout the playoffs. Do you have anything else you want to plug and let the people know before we let you out of here?
Well, if you would like to watch playoff games with us, Watch Playback is the place to go. So you can do that if you want a second screen with us. So we're breaking down plays during commercial breaks and timeouts. Breaking things down in real time. We have a lot of fun in there. So if you want to do that, you can. Other than that, the Dunker Spot is the place to be.
Absolutely.
What's it like to be a functional peer of LeBron James? Same pod network, you know?
Yeah. JJ's either talking to you or he's talking to LeBron. I mean, I'm seeing a one-to-one here.
Didn't the Cavs retweet this? I don't know.
Hey, all right, let's play the book.
That doesn't sound right.
No, that doesn't track at all. That doesn't track at all. Fellas, thank you so much for coming on. And a big thanks to everyone that tuned in live on YouTube. Make sure you like and subscribe. Click that notification bell so you know when we're going live. If you're listening via podcast and you want to support us, leave us a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of Chasedown's exclusive Discord chat, send a screenshot of their view to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. And until next time, go Cavs.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.